Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Brothers Radio Show. I'd like to say this is Leon Gatewood, your host for the evening. I think Robert is just joining us. We got Joseph joining us. How's everybody doing this evening, brothers? How y'all doing, man? How you doing, Robert?
Hey, Leon.
Everything going good for you? Yeah, we hear you, man. We hear you. We hear you. We're missing our intro music, but that's fine. We intro. We, you know, we gave we a brother. We can sing if we have to. But we won't.
Hey, what my music
We don't have to. I don't know, man.
Maybe the music didn't play.
You the producer.
Hey, I'm supposed to know.
Yeah, you supposed to know, bro.
In fact, the little wheel just spinning. Little wheel just spinning and spinning, but nothing's happening.
Well, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We have Joseph Gatewood on the line. How you doing tonight, Joseph?
I'm doing great, man. Doing great. So great to be on the Brother for Real radio talk show, bringing real information to the community and attending with it very much. Talking to you from Charlotte, North Carolina, home of the Carolina Panthers. That's been very disappointing to the
You're a real fan. You're a real fan to claim the Panthers.
Well, I have no choice.
You're a real fan.
I have no choice. It's my home team, so.
Yeah, what'd they lose, the last five games?
They lost the last four.
Last four? I thought I was exaggerating.
Oh, you really?
Wow. That's pretty bad.
They're getting that. They're getting that buck. Whoop!
Yep.
Hey, Mayan.
Huh?
Hey, Mayan.
Yo.
They're getting their butts whooped.
They're getting whooped.
Hey, y'all see what happened to y'all see what happened up here in Washington? They breaking legs up here, boy. I mean, two quarterbacks back to back get their legs broken. That's pretty.
Really?
The last.
Who brought
their
legs? Who got broken?
Alex Smith, who used to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. And they traded him out and brought in Patrick Mahomes. So Alex Smith came over to Washington in a pretty big trade. So he was pretty much they were on the track to go to the playoffs. They were like 6-3 or something like that. 6-2, I think.
Robert. Hold on, man, Robert. You can turn our intro music off now, man.
Oh. Hey, man, I'm trying to make up a lot of time, bro.
No.
Can you hear me?
That ain't
working.
It's too late.
All right,
no,
my bad.
Man.
Hey, man, I thought it was better late than never. Not in this case, huh?
Mm-hmm. No,
right,
man. Cut
all
that.
Right, man. Hey, well, check
now
this out.
Now we can hear you, bro. How you doing, man? Tell us about them broken legs. You know, those broken
legs. Man. So they brought in Alex Smith from the Kansas City Chiefs. He was playing. This is his first year. They're playing. I'm trying to think of who they were playing. Pop the guy's leg in half. I mean, like a twig in the middle of the game. So he's out for the year. I mean, ugly. Almost one of them Joe Theismann type breaks. So he's gone.
Mm.
So they bring in the backup guy, Colt McCoy, who's been on the bench now for like 3 or 4 years. And everybody's saying this guy deserves his break. He's been sitting there biding his time, hadn't thrown a ball, probably a touchdown in like 3 or 4 years. He goes out this past Monday night on against the Philadelphia Eagles. And the Philadelphia Eagles has never really cared for Washington and vice versa. They go out there and break his leg.
Well, you hear what you said, didn't you, Robert? You hear what you said, though, right?
What's that mean?
You said y'all just said he deserved a break.
Well, he got a break. You got a break.
Hey,
that's pretty good, man. That's pretty good. I missed that. That's pretty good, Leon. All right. You on your toes there, buddy.
He might have said that.
So these guys, they breaking legs up there in Washington. I'm glad. So then they got some guy, Mark Sanchez. He's the quarterback now. But it's over. The season's pretty much done.
Not really. Y'all still. I mean,
they could.
Still, nobody's clinched, but you know, you got a slim chance or no chance at all. So you still got two chances.
Yeah, that's four. That's four games to go. They're 6-6 now. So
yeah.
They could win. At the worst, they lose all four, and they'd be 6-10. But if they split it, which most people aren't giving them a chance to even do that, because they got some tough competition down the road. They got to play I think the Seahawks or somebody. They got some tough people down the road. But anyway, that's what's happening up here. And guys, just also this time of year, let's keep in mind, if you got a little money on the side, you hit the lottery, you've inherited some money, robbed a bank, whatever you've done. Don't rob a bank, but if you've done anything to accumulate some cash, go out here and start yourself a business, because you can't pass that job down to the next generation. Start a business and market it properly. We have done some. We've actually seen some phenomenal things happening here in the closing hours of 2019, and businesses are still opening. But the smart ones are doing it right. We just did a grand opening of a big urgent care center here in Fort Washington, Maryland. And now they're not African American owned, but they are hiring a lot of people from the community. We did Marketing Pulpit TV, did one of his debut broadcasts from that center this past weekend, and it's on the Marketing Pulpit website and the Facebook, where we actually interviewed the owners, walked through the building, and just showing people that there's economic viability out here. We have to start these businesses in our community to put people to work, period.
Yeah.
So, yes, some folks have some very good jobs, yes, but it's not doing the race, the community any good if you take that job to the grave with you. You've got to build something here while you have that money that you can leave behind and build legacy. And I'm going to be beating that drum as long as I have breath in me.
Well, that's a good drum to beat, bro. I like that drum. It's the drum line, bro. Curtis is on the line, Robert.
Hey, Curtis.
Hey, brothers. Curtis.
Hey, Joseph.
Leon and Joseph.
Hey, Joseph.
Yeah.
Curtis is on the line, man.
How you doing, Curtis?
Hey, Joseph. How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Good. Glad to hear from you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you guys have been doing some football and talking about black business ownership. And I just want to say this would be a good time to think about supporting black businesses.
Hello.
Because what normally happens around this time of year, retailers might end up getting about 75% of their profits just during this period.
Mm.
They get enough profits during this period to take them through the year.
Mm.
Imagine what could happen if that money was taken and invested and put into the black community or in black businesses or struggling businesses, rather than taking it down to people who are pretty much, I would say, compared to giving the your oppressor more money to buy whips and chains to shackle you with. So
that's an ugly visual, my goodness.
Giving him more money to buy.
That's cruel. That's cruel.
The best chains,
that's cruel.
The best shackles.
Give
to
some gold-plated chains.
Exactly. The ones that would never break. And so that, just imagine that versus taking the money,
excuse me. Yeah, I have to learn how to talk soft. I'm in the library. Okay.
Library.
Okay, but yeah.
Get out of there.
Yeah, I stepped over to a little room, but they said they still can hear me. But look, the key is, Robert, great. And people, we have the resources, we have the money to support businesses. We did it when it was forced upon us, but we can do it without it having to be forced. We can do it because we're being racist with our money. It's not about being racist. It's about survival. We are the only race who would not have our money turning over in our communities, and we usually take it out most during this time of year. Thank you.
But you know what, Curtis? the longer we wait and the more we procrastinate and deliberate and ruminate and the more we put it off, the worse it becomes and the harder it becomes to reverse the course.
Right.
Because institutions are being destroyed as we speak. I mean, Joe can probably speak on this. Remember when Durham used to be the bull city, like one of the black hubs in the country?
Yeah, I can speak on it.
Farmers and merchants banks and
yeah, I can speak on it too, because I worked at McKenzie Farmers Bank, and I can tell you what started happening. The older people started dying. The younger people started taking their money and taking it to CCB, BB&T, and other businesses, and allowing these. In North Carolina Mutual is another example. The entire Black Wall Street, what Highway 147 didn't do to kill it, you know, because they had that so-called urban renewal bill that passed. And they were using these transportation bills to go right down through the black community and wipe out the black businesses. And Highway 147 is now there where there was the Black Wall Street or Haiti community led up to the Black Wall Street, and now the Haiti community is dead. Now you have gentrification. And we have a big jail downtown, which I say that's the tombstone of the Black Wall Street.
And that's where politics and economics merge. Because some people, they beat the economic drum exclusively and they say, hey, we don't need politics. We got as long as we're making money, we don't need politics. And the other people that think the politics is the answer. But you can have all the money in the world, but if somebody's out here shooting you and putting streets down in the middle of your community and causing the money you make to go into a well, it's going to be all for us. You got to do both. You have to do both.
Exactly.
On the subject of doing both, I was listening to this guy on Facebook the other day, and, of course, they were trying to make this little message that they had to go viral. And what this guy was saying, he is a psychologist. And the basis of his message was that when black people, the black men, start going to college, that aided to the demise of the black community. And what he was saying
was...
Who
was that talking, Jim Crow?
I don't know who he was, But I'm just going to tell you how I responded to this guy. A lot of things he said was true. But I'm going to tell you how I'm going to just read how I responded to this guy. And I was calling you, Leon, and trying to so I can figure out how to post it to his Facebook page. But anyway, I said some of what this guy is saying is true. I said that argument has been going on since 1905 between Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. It's not either or, it's both. We need skilled black men and women as well as educated ones.
We don't need to cede
all professional positions that require college education to others. For example, doctors, attorneys, accountants, engineers, and of course attorneys who eventually, a lot of them come out of law school, eventually become judges. I said, because he was saying when the industry left the black community, that caused us to lose economically, because back then people could work in the factories and the mills and whatever and make a decent living. I said, just as the country started moving away from an agrarian society in the late 1800s, we started moving from an industrial society in the late 1970s, which was well telecast by early 1980s for those who were paying attention. It is true that you should not need to go to college. You should not need a college education to support your family. The new types of jobs that have been created could generate enough income to pay decent wages, but a new type of corporate greed was created also. For example, the CEO of Amazon has a net worth of $74 billion, and the average worker makes $13.30 an hour. The disparity in standard of living between the worker and the CEO is larger now than it was between the slave and the plantation owner.
those industrial jobs are gone and they're not coming back. To say the loss of industrial jobs is the reason for the decline in the standard of living among working people is a merely distraction. The jobs are here and the money is here. We need to be concentrating on how to make the corporations more accountable to the workers that are making them filthy wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
And after I responded to this guy, I went back and looked at some numbers. Amazon had 341,000 workers. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO of that company has a net worth of $74 billion. He could spend $9 billion and double everybody's salary, and he would still have $64 billion.
Hmm.
He could spend $9 billion and double everybody's salary.
And, so let me ask you a question.
Uh huh.
Why do you think he won't?
Why you think he won't? Because
won't
of what I
that?
Said, just plain out greed. And see, a lot of people are being misled into believing that these industrial jobs pay good money for the time. And, of course, they did, and they offer benefits. But what people have to keep in mind, too, that most of those industrial jobs, when they first were created, they went to white people. Black people were still working in the cotton fields and working in tobacco fields. And white people were working in these industrial jobs. And by the time black folks start moving into these positions were fading out. But the money that these jobs like Walmart, Amazon, these people at banks and all these other service-type industries, these jobs are creating just as much money or more. But you just have these CEOs and these people at the top that's siphoning all the money off. Just like, for example, if you could take $1 billion, and pay 20,000 people $50,000 a year, just $1 billion, and that would be a $50,000 in somewhere like Charlotte would be a livable income. But these guys are taking all of the money. So basically,
all
we
of
have
the money,
today,
Joseph.
Huh?
I was just going to ask you this now. If I heard it wrong, please correct me. Since you mentioned Charlotte, I heard that the cost or the property value of Charlotte is rising about 40%.
Leon, and that's another thing that I wanted to talk about. In Charlotte, North Carolina, right now, for the average person out here working on a job, they cannot afford a place to live. The cost of housing in Charlotte has gone up, just like you said, about 40% over the last year. A house that you could get...
And it goes around another 40% next year.
Probably will. And the sad part about it is the wages are not keeping up with the increase in cost of living. Right now we have...
Yeah, there,
right? Right now in Charlotte, North Carolina, we have... We have a standard of living that's coming close to somewhere like New York and New Jersey, but we still have these people out here still trying to live off $10 and $9 an hour.
Yeah.
And it's all because corporate greed. Just like, for
that's
example, it's
scary.
Like I said, the average worker at Amazon makes $13.30 an hour. You could take $9 billion and give it and double everybody's income. $9 billion
and
double everybody's income,
and
the CEO would still have $64 billion.
That's about $26,000 a year. That's not a lot of money.
That's what I'm saying. But those are the facts.
I must say so myself.
Those are the facts, and see, and that's the type of thing that we're dealing with. And when you hear people talking about the problem with people's standard of living because all these industrial jobs are gone, that is nothing but a distraction. These jobs at Walmart are making just as much money. These jobs at Amazon, these jobs at these banks, these jobs at these call centers, they're making just as much money or more money than these industrial jobs were making.
Hey, mm-hmm. brothers.
Yo. And the Deep Brothers.
Hey, man, high five to Joseph and everything that he just said. Thumbs up, fist, all that good stuff. And I just want to add to the fact, and again, that reiterates the you got to have the political machines working as well as the self-help. Robert
exactly
talked earlier
right.
about the self-help,
exactly right.
getting the businesses going. We need to have these people down here at the North Carolina General Assembly and all these other
That's
places,
right.
the governor and the mayor and all these people who are paying these starvation wages. We have
right.
to hold them accountable. Because the greedy will be as greedy as long as you allow them to be greedy.
That's
and
right.
they are not going to give up anything until the people decide.
That's right. And see, the sad thing, like you said, and it all starts with the government. Because the senators
yep.
and these people in the
mm-hmm.
House of Representatives, only thing
mm-hmm.
they are being proxies for the wealthy. Because
exactly
the whole,
right.
because the pure definition of government, the pure definition of government is that a government is formed to protect the weak from the powerful. That's the pure
mm-hmm.
definition of government is to protect
mm-hmm.
the weak from the powerful. And see, and right now our government is not doing that. And anytime
exactly
you hear people
right.
talking about they want less government, you hear these poor people talking about they want less government, and they
hmm.
buy into that that ignorant conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Only
yeah.
thing you are doing is giving these guys up here the greed. You're just giving them the green light to keep doing what they are doing, because that's what government is for, is to stop this type of slavery is what it is. It's modern day slavery. The only difference is now between the slavery that black people experienced up until 1865 and the slavery that's going on now, the slaves at least did try to run away. But people now, they don't even run away. They just get up and come back the next morning, which is a big benefit to these guys.
Wow.
Right.
Now, that was the deepest I've heard in quite a while right there, man. You're getting deeper by the minute.
Yeah, man, but I just, but you know, after I did a little research on that this week, you know, because that's what I do. And this type of stuff, it just burns me up. It burns me up.
Yeah, you don't find
You know, you
man,
have
though.
People out here struggling, can't send the kids to college, they can't buy a decent, have a decent place to live. And these guys up here, I think they said this guy, the Bezos, the CEO at Amazon, say he made $1 billion in one day. And then they said on another occasion he made $6 billion in 20 minutes.
Hmm.
But somehow he can't, but somehow his average worker is making $13.30 an hour. And that makes sense to
yeah.
anybody?
Wonder how it
yeah.
makes sense to them. That's what confuses me. How does that make sense to you?
Well, see, the thing with them, they all in the power. Just like you take these guys like Warren Buffett. You know, Warren Buffett, I think he's worth like $76 billion. Gates, about 80-something billion. See, to these guys, that money is just about power. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
right now they're
yeah,
in a contest who can be the richest man in the world. And they don't care who they trample on, who they starve to death
yeah.
in the process.
Yeah.
That's what it is to them.
There's another thing, Leon and Joseph and Robert, that we need to think about. See, we often hear about the slave mentality, which, of course, are those people who are former slaves who pretty much are satisfied receiving nothing, who pretty much been so oppressed and been without for so long that when they get a $50,000 job, they really, oh, my goodness, we're getting paid a lot of money. So there's a slave mentality, but we don't talk enough about the slave master mentality. And see, the slave master mentality is that mentality that just makes you get all those billions and
mm-hmm.
and think that it's okay.
That's right.
It's okay because you can leave the slave naked. You can leave the slave without any money. You can leave him without anywhere to go, any transportation, any clothes, any food. See, they have the slave master mentality.
That's a good point,
so,
Curtis. I never thought about it.
Yeah,
that's a good point.
Yeah, but we don't think see, these people are coming up, and that's why we have stopped
we don't think we are slaves anymore, or we think we are free, but they're making sure you're not free because they're taking all the money. They're not leaving you anything to really live by or live with. And
right.
So, but since they're not using terms like slavery, or they're not using it, see, they can just use the slave mentality or the slave master mentality to just get over totally, because they don't feel like they're getting too much, because that's what slave masters did. They left you naked.
It's like for example, Berkshire Hathaway. That's the company where Warren Buffett is the CEO over. They said that corporation right now has $100 billion in cash. It has $100 billion in cash, but here's the punchline. Before Trump's tax break, they had $68 billion in cash. So if you got $68 billion in cash, you ain't really hurting for nothing, right?
Right.
You ain't really hurting for nothing if you got $68 billion in cash. But with that tax break that Donald Trump was able to get through the House of Representatives and get through the Senate, that added $32 billion to Berkshire Hathaway's coffers. $32 billion.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Brothers of Real Radio
Show. Slave
mentality.
The slave master mentality.
The slave master mentality. Listen to the Brothers of Real Radio Show. This is the Joseph, Robert, Leon, and Curtis of the Brothers of Real Radio Show, who were brought up in a family of 14 children and two loving parents. They owe the blessings of their survival to the love they experienced not only from their parents, but each other as they grew up. Surely all families have challenges and tragedies, and the Gatewoods have not been exempt from that. So tonight, the brothers are going to delve into the years of their youth and discuss how the past has influenced their present situations. We hope you'll call us and join in the conversation. The number to call is 215-383-3872. So we hope you'll call in and join in the conversation, kind of share your experience growing up into your home and how these experiences can help us address some of the issues that we have in our community, because it was a successful experience for us. And we're hoping that we can get some information from our listeners and ourselves that we can use to help rebuild our community. You listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We'll be right back. The number to call is 215-383-3872. Put this bank and say right there, beepity pop pop, beepity pop pop, Frosty the Snowman. Tell us how, brothers. I'm number 11 in the family, right? That means I have 10 above me and 3 under me.
Wow.
Now, of course, that's a lot of people. I was so excited, though. You know, as a kid, you know, you had your big brothers to look up to. You had your mom and dad to take care of you while you were looking up to your big brothers. You had your big brothers and sisters to slap you upside the head when you did something crazy or did something you didn't do that they wanted you to do. Life was good, man. And you know, my biggest thing is, I was talking to the guy from WTVI was down here at the Holler Center today. he was doing a documentary on the Hall of Fame and stuff, and he was asking me, you know, different things. And I was kind of explaining to him how I was brought up in this huge family. And it's hard for me to, one of the things, you know, we're trying to raise we're addressing low achievement in the school system. And one of the things I don't ever catch myself doing is feeling sorry for somebody. And I'm going to explain that. It's because, you know, one of the few reasons you will find to feel sorry for somebody is because they're, you know, the first thing coming here, man, they poor, they don't have anything. We didn't have anything. We didn't have those material things that people had. So what kept us going was the self-esteem that was built up. You know, I used to always say, man, it's a wonder we have any kind of self-esteem. Well, girl closed the school. We did all kinds of stuff that, you know, made people laugh at you. You know, your dad messed up haircuts. If anything you can think of that would make people laugh at you as a kid, we had it. We went through it. But somehow our self-esteem stayed on top. We didn't think we were better than anybody else, but we certainly didn't think we were less than anybody else. We were lesser than anybody else. So, brothers, how did that happen? What happened? What made it that way? Why are you still positive? What kept you positive? What kept you strong? What made you go to school and say, I'm still going to make A's?
Well, like I said, it was the biggest, one of the things was, like back then, like we've talked about a lot of, you know, you had a lot of good role models in the community. Like, for example, we had Daddy, of course, you know. He was a minister, and even though he didn't have any money, he wasn't one of these big time preachers, like, you know. But, you know, I guess down in that part of the neck of the woods, of course, he was. But, you know, people looked up to him, of course, and naturally we're going to look up to him. And, of course, we had Grandpa Clyde that was going, he was a businessman. And, of course, we had Professor Jones in the neighborhood. We had Roy Hamlin out there with the grocery store.
Yeah.
I mean, we just grew up in a good environment. And
we grew up in a good environment and basically a good time. You know,
a good time. And, see, I've often made jokes about this. And, of course, and like I say, I didn't even know that people that were living on our standard of living were considered to be poor people until I got to college. You know, I remember just as good, we sitting up in a history class talking about the perils and the struggles of rural southern black families, the day-to-day struggles, you know, looking at pictures. I'm like, wait a minute, I said, that look like us. I'm like, wait a minute, they talking about us. But like I say, I grew up, I didn't even, you know, I'm sitting up in North Carolina Central University, you know, with a lot of people that were financially a whole lot better off than I was. But I felt like I fit right in. And like you said, it was nothing because of my money. It was because I still had my self-esteem intact. And one of the things I've often said, I said, you know, by the time I got up at North Carolina Central University, I said, well, I figured out I'm poor now. I said, well, it's too late now. I'm in college.
Exactly. I'm going to go back to what you said about your self-esteem and how it stays intact. But what I would really like to get out of this conversation is how we can address building low self-esteem in young people today, because I think that's one of the big issues that I hear. You know, I always go back to my reason. I think it's they don't have any. It's because what's pumped in their heads all day through their media, through their music, you know. I can't let that go. And the reason I can't let it go, because I know on this I'm right. If you sit there and pump that stuff in their heads, that they're pumping in their heads all day, you will be just as foolish. So anyway, so somehow we got to figure this out. We have to use what we have to help others, if you will. How do we get people to understand?
Hey, Leon.
Yes, sir.
Now I was going to say there was a as we were having this conversation, I was thinking about you ever seen those ink blot tests where they throw some ink on a piece of paper and your different people see different things? Some people may see somebody on a horse, somebody may see a baby, somebody may see a gun. It's like that's the that seems to be what's happening in our community. We have what one person may see is something one way. A different person looking at the exact same thing will see something different. And the determining factor goes back to upbringing and positive role models. One person can walk in a store and see clean store aisles, and they could be saying, wow, this is a really nice place to shop. Another person walks in there and they can see an opportunity to steal, to shoplift. What was your upbringing? What type of influences has that child been under to make them take an entirely different path from somebody who's watching the exact same thing, have given the same opportunities? There's a reason, but it starts young. That's why I have to give some kudos to HALA and organizations that understand that you can't take somebody out of a certain environment and put them in a new environment and they magically become the success story. Because you have to start with them young, because they're going to see life through that prism of deprivation, of hardship, of unfairness. And that goes back to what Curtis is always talking about. If you constantly having to fight injustice, then that's going to be how you see life. So we have to start, the bottom line is we have to start younger and reach them earlier. Otherwise, the kid's going to be always swimming upstream.
Yep. Yep. Leon?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Can you hear me? Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. There is another thing that happened, and there is an elephant in the room. I think we underestimate the retrogression, desegregation at the stages that it took place. African Americans had not fully recovered from slavery and finding themselves and knowing who they were. They had not gained the opportunity to really learn who they are, connect to the tree of the fruit of history that produced the greatness that we had. And one of the reasons it did not matter, I was going to say, one of the reasons it didn't matter that much to us at the point of segregation. See, forced segregation made us stay together, stay on our side of the track. It forced the principal to live in the same community, we talked about this before, with the people who actually were considered probably trouble students in the school. It forced the doctor, the black doctor, to live with the people who will ultimately be his patients, the people whose babies he would deliver. It forced us to become a unit. When desegregation took place and opened the gates, without us being in our right minds and without us being as culturally sound as we could have and should have been, and of course the systemic slavery degradation and all that separation of our cultures, robbing of our history, we were not prepared to go into a society and compete with people who had their culture, that culture intact. We underestimated that, I think. So in addition to what we see with religious beliefs and good role modeling, the larger society basically ate us up because we had been trained to be Negroes rather than being connected to a strong foundation of history. And most people who come over here, that's why you will see, whether they're black Haitians, whether they're yellow Asians, whether they're brown Latinos, whether they're other white people, they do better when they were not born and raised as Negroes in America. The Negronization of black people did a lot of damage that we've totally underestimated. And so we felt better with our black folk, but we didn't know to what extent we were unprepared to deal with the desegregation question. All right, but go ahead.
Is there a remedy?
Yeah. Yes, there is a remedy. It's never a time to be hopeless. We must remember that.
I understand
that.
I get that.
And see, what we need to understand is once we understand what the problem is and admit what the problem is, then we can deal with the solution. Right now, societal racism, societal self degradation and self hatred and ignorance, it's never been rectified. Still hating yourself, you are going to that self hatred is going to be exacerbated when you get into a culture where people really have themselves better prepared. If you're hating yourself and you walk into a classroom and you have Asians performing, you have Latinos coming in, don't even know the language, and now starting to pick up and perform above you, and you have whites who are performing, and you're sitting in that classroom unprepared, they're not going to tell you why. They're not going to tell you because we robbed your grandmama, we robbed your granddad, we made sure y'all couldn't read, we made sure you couldn't write, we gave you substandard education, we took you through Jim Crow, we took you through COINTELPRO. They're not going to tell black students that. So it's being reiterated, and it's making them feel like they're inferior because they have been left without their history and without their knowledge. So the way to correct it is we have to go back and re-educate. We have to let students know about the robbery. We have to let students know about the robbing of their culture and their history. And it has to be societal. It can't just be done in pockets. You got a few people who will do it over in this corner. You got a few people who will do it there. Then it's demonized. It's called black this and black that. It shouldn't be black this. It shouldn't be black that. It should be doing the right thing to help us re-educate a generation of people who've been lost.
But hey, Curtis, Leon.
Yeah. Yes.
Let me give you a good example of what's possible if we can, like Curtis said, stop having our children have to be raised as Negroes in a racist society.
Right.
Let me give you a good example. Let me ask you a question. Have you all ever heard of a guy named Barack Obama?
Guy named what?
Have you ever heard of a guy named Barack Obama?
Yeah.
And the reason I'm bringing up Barack Obama is because Barack Obama, of course, he is very obviously a black man.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason Barack Obama had this is my opinion, this is my theory.
Right.
The reason that Barack Obama had the self-esteem and he felt he had the self-worth that he could rise to the highest position in the land as a black man because he was not brought up in America during his formative years.
He was not.
He
exactly.
was not.
His daddy was an African.
His daddy was an African, number one. And, of course, his mama was a white woman.
Mm-hmm.
But the crucial thing is he was not, during his formative years, he was not in America.
He was not
from the time he was from age 6 to 10. Of course, you know these are the formative years.
Exactly. I mean, from birth to age 3.
That's right. From age 6 to age 10, Barack Obama was in Indonesia.
I understand that. I understand all that. But Jesse Jackson thought he had it.
But what I'm saying, but he thought he had it. But still, Jesse Jackson did not have the same thing that Barack Obama had. You can say what you want to.
Shirley Chisholm thought she had
it.
She thought she had it. But none of these people, just like right now, Joseph Gatewood, I probably could not have withstood the pressure and the criticism that Barack Obama withstood. And the reason I'm saying that is because, and all of us have to admit it, we still have a little bit of a doubt about ourselves based on
Absolutely.
The way we were brought up in the American society.
Absolutely.
You have to acknowledge it. You have to acknowledge
yeah.
it. And because when you acknowledge it, you will know how to combat it. You will know how to prepare
exactly.
yourself
that's
to deal
saying.
With it.
Exactly.
And see, that's the
we
problem.
Like,
see, a lot of our
right.
our young people, they don't understand what's going on. And so they're
right.
not preparing themselves to combat this racism and this discrimination
right.
and this and all this derogation that we have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. They don't even know what's going
right.
on.
Hey, Joe.
But the point I'm making is, of course, and of course everybody can't go to Indonesia and live, but it makes the point that society in America has been so hard on us as a people. Keep in mind now, people may like slavery has been over for a long time. Slavery is not that far down the road.
Right.
Like, for example, when my daddy was born, our daddy was born, slavery had been over 51 years. So that's
mm-hmm.
not a long time.
Not long at all. And,
that's
Joe, can I add to that? And, y'all,
You're
can
glad.
I add to that? In addition to the fact that slavery was not that long ago, people never stopped discriminating. People never stopped being using degradation and terrorism, racial terrorism and murder and COINTELPRO and Jim Crow and all
yeah.
those other things. That and then these massacres where you had successful places like Tulsa, where you had these number Black Wall Streets being destroyed
right.
totally. You had Wilmington when people had started getting on their feet and started actually becoming involved in business and politics, and then they were murdered and run out of the city. People underestimate this psychological damage in addition to the actual physical robbery.
That's right. See, we going through, and seeing the thing about it is, I think it all starts with, it has to be with education. It has
right.
to be with people understanding their past and understanding, just like one philosopher, I can't think of his name right now, but a people who do not remember the past are doomed to repeat it.
Mm-hmm.
And see, and that's what we're dealing with right now. And see, and the school system is Horace Mann curriculum that's been going on since that's in the school system. Only thing that Horace Mann curriculum does that the school systems have been using for decades is the only thing it does is tells you, it talks about how powerful and successful white folks have been and how poor and pitiful black folks have been. That's the bottom line.
In other words, it reiterates the problem.
Correct. It reiterates
yeah.
the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What we
know that's
yet,
why we
what
have.
We're not
that's
getting,
why. That's why we as parents, we have to rear our children. We have to educate our children. Just like in South Africa, the last thing that happened in South Africa, when apartheid went in place in South Africa, so the last thing that happened that the black people in South Africa really got in an uproar about is when the apartheid government wanted to take over the education of their children, and of course, and they fought against it, but they were unsuccessful. But they said when the white apartheid government took over the education of their children became unruly and violent.
Hey, Joe, this is what Malcolm X said, guys, and this was one of probably his most poignant quotes he ever made. He said, America's greatest crime against the black man was not slavery or lynching, but that he was taught to wear a mask of self-hate and self-doubt.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
Because
mm-hmm.
you lynch somebody or kill them, you kill that one person. But
that's
when you
right.
take a whole race or generation and teach them to hate themselves and to question
right.
their abilities, that's pandemic
exactly.
and much more damaging.
That's right.
Exactly.
And that goes and see and what's even worse about it, we've been taught to pass that from generation to generation.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And they're doing it every day, guys. I'm trying to tell you. They're doing it every day in that music. They do it every day and all day.
That's enough.
And
we just still ignore it. We just ignore it. And they have solicited
a lot of these rap artists to do the dirty work for them. And I was reading something recently where they said the image that these rappers with all this crazy talking, all this foolishness that they're espousing, not only in our community, but all over the world, they say it's causing the whole world to look at black people in a very negative way.
Right.
And another thing, a lot of people don't realize this, but this rap music, the people that's primarily financing are not black people. Because black people don't have enough money to do that. This stuff is being financed by white people. And see, a lot of black folk don't even realize that.
Yeah, Jerry Heller was one of the guys, this white guy, Jewish guy, white guy right down here in L.A. He was one of the ones that put out, he gave the foundation and the promotion for Niggas with Attitudes. And that's where it basically started. They pushed the envelope to see how far could they go with it without getting resistance. And they went as far. They couldn't believe how far they could go. They could say nigga. They could say we're gonna kill you, nigga. They could say it all day. They didn't know they could do that. So the more they saw that it was acceptable, and people would buy it. I mean, so that is another one of those things that was just as bad as slavery. That came along to help to reiterate black self-hatred, help to promote it. And help to package it for a whole new generation. And it also brought to life all the negative stereotypes that they could think of. They put them on stage for the world to see.
That's right. Put it on the world, everybody could see it.
Yeah, the most.
So everybody, don't care where you go in the world, that's how they look at you.
Exactly.
And seeing another thing,
ladies
too,
and gentlemen,
the thing with.
Once upon a time, if
you had somebody who was acting ignorant and acting crazy, it was confined to their neighborhood. But now with the internet and with the cell phone and television,
your ignorance is spread
all over the world for the whole world to see. So if somebody doing something crazy in Los Angeles, the next thing you know, the same people doing the same crazy stuff down in Wadesboro, North Carolina.
Yeah.
You got that right. Brothers, let's take a break just a second. Ladies and gentlemen, listen to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. The number to call is 215-383-3872. We just got about 7 or 8 more minutes left on the line. So if you would like to join in the conversation, please call 215-383-3872. We do have a call on the line. Caller, would you like to speak? Caller would like to speak. Ladies and gentlemen, like I say, you listen to the Brother Free Radio Show, 215-383-3872. Joseph.
Yes.
What else is going on in Charlotte, man? We're getting ready to close this show out in just a little bit. We're going to make sure everybody gets time to tell what's going on in this city. Let me say this first, though, Joseph. We did have WTVI TV. That's what they call the public broadcasting station in Charlotte. They're doing a documentary on the Carolina Impact segment of their show on the Holler organization, and they were actually here today. They came in about 1:30 and left about 6 o'clock. I spent almost all day with us, man. You know?
Congrats.
That's outstanding.
Amen.
It was wonderful. They spent most of the day with us, and it was a good experience. We're trying to make sure we doing the best we can to bring resources into our community. You know, a lot of people are coming to our community, and they'll use our demographics to get money to support their neighborhoods.
But really?
You know how that can happen. Absolutely.
That's surprising.
Not
hey,
about
Leon.
That, right? Yeah, they. Yeah, man.
What happened today at Holler is something that should be happening on a more regular and frequent basis. Because the one of the challenges in our community is that we don't control the message, and every dictator, every movement, every person who has made a mark in this world had the attention of the media. And the funny thing about the media, they can turn off and turn on people at will. If it doesn't fit their agenda, they can just turn it. Yeah, just turn you off. They don't have to shoot you. They don't have to do anything to you. Just turn off your mic, and nobody will hear you. If we don't control the microphone,
mic off, man.
That's the problem. Nobody's turning his mic off because they don't want to turn it off. Trump is carrying out their agenda. They won't turn his mic up. That's the problem. But people like Holla, we need more mics that we can turn on when we want to without having to wait for somebody else to come out there with their mic to tell our story. That is part of the problem right there, too.
That's right.
Yeah. You know, if we keep building this radio show, this could be a good place for people to come and hear
exactly.
The mic. You know what I mean?
That's the mic.
Right.
That has been one of my missions in life. We have to create more microphones. That was the whole concept behind the Marketing Pulpit, the Brothers for Real, now Marketing Pulpit TV. We have to control the mic. We need more microphones.
Yeah.
We need to try to neutralize the Rush Limbaughs of the world.
That's right. That's right. Because otherwise, these guys are just being spoon-fed propaganda 24/7. And we're just sitting over here saying, well, let's go out here and we'll try to fight back by marching and spending and holding money. But if you don't control the microphone, nobody knows. Nobody knows.
I heard a politician say something the other day that made a whole lot of sense. You know, you remember when Donald Trump made his little remark about you black folks been voting Democratic all these years. What do you got to show for it? What do you got to lose? Well, this guy said he said these white people, these poor white people, been voting Republican all these years. What have they got to show for it?
Man, that's cold right there.
Either what have they got to show?
That's cold right there.
And
see,
that's the kind of message somebody need to be getting out there, even to these people. Because until we get these people on board, until we get these poor white people on board, we're not going to have enough change. Because keep in mind, only reason segregation started in the first place, the aristocrats in the South did not want the newly freed blacks and the poor whites to come together, form a coalition, and disrupt their position of power. That was the only reason behind segregation. Pure.
Hey, Joe.
Check
this out. 63% of the country disapproves of Donald J. Trump. But
yeah.
To listen to the media, you would not believe that.
That's right.
That's all you need to hear right there. 63% disapprove of this guy, but you listen to the media, you get this false equivalency. You think it's 50-50 at worst.
Right.
But you definitely wouldn't believe that many people are against Trump because the media doesn't want you to think that.
That's right.
I'm tired of
news media talking about Trump, either negative or positive. Because, number one, the reason that they keep doing it is because they're making money from it.
Turn off his mic, in other words, like you said.
Turn his mic off.
Another way to prove what you guys are saying is, what happened to the Tea Party? Okay, during the Obama's administration, the Tea Party had the mic, right?
Mm-hmm.
They obstructed, they lied. They did everything they could to make it look like Barack Obama was either not doing his job, he was doing all this lavish spending, he was doing all these different things. They did everything they could to downplay all the success of his health care agenda, all of his other work, the things that he wanted to do domestically. It was all just a Tea Party attack, obstruction everywhere. And those people's mics were turned up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happened to the party? All of a sudden,
yeah.
Now you have all that spending you just talked about, Joe, that went to the rich, all that money, wasteful spending, all the wasteful spending that's taking place with the military now, all the wasteful spending that's taking place all across the country. Now it's no longer an issue because they selectively give the mic to those people who can obstruct black progress and black success. Let's make it plain. But they turn the mic down whenever it's time for a racist to come forward, incompetent, not doing the job, but they let him have the mic. All of his credit
has
been turned off.
Brothers, our time has run out, man. This has been a beautiful conversation, very informative, very exciting, but our time has run out, brothers. Please come back next Wednesday. Let's finish up on some of this conversation we're having. God bless you, brothers. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to the Brothers for Real Radio Show. We've been giving real talk about growing up and just about everything else we can think of tonight. God bless you, brothers. Please call back. Please come back in. And listeners, thank you for listening. God bless you. We're getting ready to get up out of here. And whatever you can say, whatever you want to say, but just keep it real. And now we have to add something else to it. And let it be true. There's a lying going on in this country right now. God bless you. We'll talk to you soon, everybody. Have a good night. Hey, brothers, y'all have a good night, man. I've been down here in this hollow all day.
Go home, boy. Go home.
I'm tired. I'm tired of Hollywood.
Hey, man, when your show come on radio? Come on TV. When your show come on TV?
January.
Keep us posted, man. Want to put it out there.
Keep us posted, brother. Yeah, man.
All right, brother.
Peace out.